Honorable Sihlezi Kalala, Deputy Minister Honorable Benoit Swart, Acting DG and your team, the support team from Parliament that supports the Portfolio Committee, and all those that are part of our meeting today. Greetings to you all. We have convened this meeting today to receive the quarterly performance report from the department. We're doing that because it is one of the tools that we have to use as the Portfolio Committee to play our oversight role to the department. We are checking, we are going to check whether the department has carried out the plans that it promised to carry. Has it complied with the PFMA in this quarterly report? Has it complied with regulations from Treasury? And we know that we're not only the structure that is supposed to receive this, Treasury is also supposed to receive this report. But we are also aware that the executive, before this report is brought to us, it also has to play its role in oversighting the department. We're doing our work. We are happy with what we have seen in some of the things that here, Minister, as the head of the policy in the department. We appreciate that there is work that you're doing when it comes to Public Works Act, as it is reported here. But as much as you're doing that work, Minister, but we want to raise it here that it has taken a long time. We understand you don't even have a year in the department, but we raised the issue of Public Works Act since 2019, but we appreciate that you are here so far. We also see that you almost done with CIDB, but we hope that all those legislative frameworks and policies that have to be done by this department will all be done. We also, as the Portfolio Committee, raised an issue about CBE, the way how CBE is excluding women, the way how CBE is dominated by male, white members. So I hope that in the future you will look at that. We have seen you, Minister, going around the country, and we saw the unfortunate, in fact, we read it in the newspaper, the unfortunate incident that happened in Northwest, when you were consulting, especially the women constructors through the invitation, of course. We hope such an incident may not happen, because as you correctly put it so, that platform was good, especially for women constructors, and the fact that it was disrupted, it is not a good thing. We always complain that women are not given chances, hoping that council will resolve its internal challenges, but continue doing the good work, Minister. I hope that won't stop you, that unfortunate incident, in visiting another provinces, in engaging with all those that are participating in the entities of the department. With those few words, I welcome you all in this meeting. Lwazi, do we have any apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. Chairperson, I have an apology from Minister Zikalala, who is attending a cabinet meeting. And I also have an apology of Honorable Pascal Vick, who will join later. Thank you,
okay.
Chair.
In addition to that, can we add the apology of Honorable Mashele, who is also traveling and will join the meeting later. We then invite the department as there has been an apology. There is an apology of Minister Zikalala. We invite Deputy Minister to introduce the report. Is the Deputy Minister in?
Good morning, Chair. Not yet, Chairperson.
Minister, Deputy Minister, not in.
The DG is here, Chairperson.
No, but their principals ought to be here. It can't be that there's not a single one that is here. It can't be. It can be. Acting DG, can you look for your principal? Because it can't be that there is not a single one who is in the platform.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members. Let me do so. But the presentation today will be led by Metelwazi Mahlangu, the DDG responsible for governance, risk, and compliance. If he may proceed, I will try and find the Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Can you give the hosting rights to Mr. Lwazi Mahlangu?
A long time ago, Chair.
Okay, sure.
Yes. Good morning, Chairperson, and also members of the committee, Minister and DM of Public Works and colleagues from the department. Chairperson, I'm not sure if it's showing on your screen.
Yes, it is. It is.
Yes, there we go. Yes, Chairperson, I'm going to take you through the presentation on the 23-24 financial year first quarter performance of the department. Our presentation is split into three areas, Chair. In the responding, this is a slide showing the response to the request by the committee. And then our presentation is split into the four areas, mandate of the department. The second part deals with non-financial performance information, which is from slides 8 to 26, financial performance with the main vote from slide 27 to 34, and the financial performance of PMTE from slides 35 to 43. I will not go into detail on the mandate. I'll go straight into the non-financial performance of the information, Chair, and then take the members through the level of performance of the department. contribute, and largely find that some of the challenges are basically input issues, capacity, budget, policies, deal implementation, consultations. So those are some of the issues. We do this grading chair so that when we look at the deviations and the corrective steps, it then makes it easy for us to be able to then look at the appropriate corrective steps as a strategy. The one example, Chair, is that if you are in the red and our categorization in the red is at an input level, you can't then come with a strategy of activity and enhancing the activity and efficiencies within the system, whereas the actual aspect that contributes to poor performance is actually an input. Therefore, your response should be around the input. So that is the connection, Chair, and the grading we are using so that there's that understanding. In terms of this slide, then shows the overall performance quarter one for all the programs 1 to 11, Chair, and the members of the committee. In program one, it consists of a number of programs. Program one consists of the Ministry, Deputy Minister's Office, Office of the DG, Internal Audit, Corporate Services, Governance, Risk and Compliance, Finance, and Prestige. So these units, Chair, basically have the number of indicators. So what you see here, which I'll go into the details, the breakdown of the indicators, is indicators that will be represented largely from a support point of view, where we focus on the corporate services, the support in terms of capacity, as well as the ICT systems that are required to drive the mandate. And then from a governance point of view, also the ethical issues and also the surveys that we conduct to ensure that we pick up areas where we need to tighten controls, and then the compliance issues where we then also test the extent of compliance, and compliance is linked to how we improve the controls. And then when you link that compliance, it's also linked to your audit action plan, because the audit action plan reflects on a number of controls, and therefore the compliance will also correlate with what is the action plan in relation to the controls that are in place, so that then if we tighten controls, we shouldn't have recurring findings. So that's basically what is represented in quarter in program one. Yeah. So Chairperson, in terms of the targets, 33, we are sitting at 33% in terms of targets. Now, I'm going to explain that its number of targets achieved is not the level of performance per KPI, which I'll also explain. So program two, these are not quarter targets. NQT is not a quarter target, but we have expressed the activities that are taking place during that quarter, leading to the actual achievement at the end of the financial year. I'll explain it when I get to that to the slides, that so that you can see the trend towards that. Program three, EPWP, is that number of reports, but we've also given the figures, Chair, of where we are in terms of the EPWP reporting system in terms of the numbers. Policy, I think for over a period of time, this is one area where for a couple of years has been challenged, and we're seeing that there's some movement now. We're just sitting at all the targets that have been achieved, and I'll explain the change within policy in terms of what then is done within the organization, and then also outside the organization, the second layer that then also assists in terms of driving the policy. Then program five, prestige, the three indicators, which basically provide support. One indicator achieved out of those three, giving us 33%. Finance, this is the PMTE finance. It's zero in terms of targets not achieved. This is the point I was explaining, Chair, that the difference between targets achieved and the level of performance per KPI. In terms of the performance per KPI, it's sitting at 77% when you look at the actual expenditure against that quota target. It's sitting at 77%. But in terms of the quantum of the targets that are achieved based on our rating, it's zero because it's below 90%. So the zero does not mean nothing is happening. It's just that in terms of quantum of the targets that achieved, the target has not been achieved, but we are now sitting at 77% towards the achievement 10% towards the achievement of the target. So that's basically how it's read. REMS, 40%, some targets achieved, some not achieved, sitting at 40%. REAS, which is the information register, asset register, 50%, half of the targets achieved to one of two. And then FM, two of three indicators have been achieved. Then I'll go into the details. Jay, on the side here, what we're showing is our barometer, where we say if you compare or look at the level of performance, which is now the aggregate of all the quarter one, we are sitting at 41%. That's below 50% in terms of the 50% mark of achievement. Now, when you compare that with the previous financial year's quarter-on-quarter analysis per financial year, in 2020-21, we are sitting 23% in quarter one. In last financial year, we're sitting at 26%. This financial year, we're sitting at 41%. So there's marginal improvement in terms of the quarter performance when you compare with the previous financial years. And if you compare also the quantum of the indicators over the previous financial years, we have maintained more or less similar number of targets at around 29 to 31 KPIs. So that is something that can be compared. So which then by that comparison for 23-24 financial year, there's a slight improvement in terms of the achievement of the quantum of indicators. Right. Now I go to the next slide. Now this is now a breakdown of the high-level summary chair. First of all, the indicators where we also do ethics and fraud perception rate, we're sitting at a target of 20 to 40%. Now, the targeting is a lower targeting point of view because the expectation here, because we're measuring the expectations and the perceptions, the assumption is that if there is low perception around ethics and corruption in the department, then it gives a hint that there may be improvement in terms of controls and how we are perceived as a corrupt organization. But if the perception is very high, then this will be regarded as a highly corrupt and unethical organization. So the targeting of this is a downward targeting to show the lowest level of perceptions from the surveys, which will then represent an ethical and capable DPW. So the targeting would be a downward one, not an upwards. So what we are doing now, where it's not a quarter target, but there's the conceptualized questionnaires, which are now being finalized, and then will then be circulated for the surveys. And then that basically will then lead us to the analysis in quarter two and quarter three. And then in quarter four, we make a determination of what then are the perceptions. There are seven categories that we follow. Four that relates to corruption, and three that relate to ethics. That will then feed into your compliance, as well as will also assist in a determination of the effectiveness of your consequence management framework. And then compliance is 100% is the target. The target for the quarter, we're sitting at 86%. Here we're measuring the top 20 compliance matters in the organization. The challenge that we face in what is the issues around the delays that we normally face during the disciplinary issues. Disciplinary cases, they take longer to conclude. If you follow the rule of thumb, 60 working days, we find that most of them are beyond that, and the reasons are sometimes find that there's poor representation when the deal cases have to sit. At times we find that the person in question also puts in a leave or off sick, and then it creates that a domino effect of delays over a period of time. Hence, that is the one issue that has actually been affected in relation to the achievement of a higher percentage. We acknowledge that at least from 95% upwards, we would be green on the compliance, even though the 100%, but we accept that at least above 95%, at least majority of the compliance issues have efficient controls. But you're sitting at 86%, it's way below 95%, hence it's in yellow. And the second aspect that contributes to this is our response rate in relation to request for information through the PAIA process. Now, this is also an issue where you find that PAIA is a regulated environment where we need to then demonstrate and complete the process within 30 days. But we do face challenges where we go beyond 30 days because now sometimes the clients or the requester does not pay the amount upfront, and then at the time when we then need to close off, then provide the reasons why they could not pay, or then they subsequently pay. Then it takes us beyond the 30 days. So those are some of the issues that relate. So we've also put in a control to say, if a client does not pay within 14 days from the receipt of the request, we then close the matter. You'll find that just as we're about to close the matter, then the client then pays. And then the process starts afresh, and then it prolongs this. So these are the critical areas that then deal with this. Now, why are they so critical, Chair, and correct, contributing to the delay? It's because of their internal and external matters. Internal, the processes may have been done, but we rely heavily on external. For instance, in terms of locator cases, is the person in question, or the commissioner, or a representative from the external. So sometimes we really rely on their availability. And then same applies with the buyer. The issues are more external that they contribute to our internal delays. So those are the issues. Percentage, Chair, we are sitting at 41% as I reflected here, which is basically a scorecard. And then in terms of financial levels, sitting at 90%. 70% in the barometer, as I reflected there, in terms of the target in the indicator itself, but nothing has been achieved. The delays, Chair, in the transfer of the non-state sector from the EPWP side. I think from the finance point of view, when they go into the detail, they will also give effect to this one as well. From a vacancy rate, our target is 10. We're sitting at 11%. This is a breakdown. 70 appointments have been made. 8 positions were advertised, and then we strive towards ensuring that from the date of the advert, we fill positions within 6 months, allowing the entire process of advert, putting together the panels, sitting and vetting, as well as ensuring that the final appointment then takes place. All that we strive to move towards 6 months. So when you look at the total, 32 of 59 positions that have actually been assessed in that regard, and that gives us a vacancy rate of 11%, 1% above the 10% criteria. Yes, we do acknowledge the fact that we would want to have the lowest vacancy rate as possible, but we are working on our baseline to say what will be our buffer in terms of efficiency within driving the organization, and secondly, the availability of funding for us to fill those positions, and thirdly, the skills that will be required to improve productivity, at the same time moving towards ensuring that we move towards the lowest possible vacancy rate. So those are factors that come into play. But 11% vis-a-vis the 10%, and DPSA-wide benchmark is 10% for all government departments. So we, while benchmarking DPSA, we still have the interested organization to go as low as possible. We further break it down in terms of women in SMS, is 2%, 2% for people with disabilities. We are sitting at 41% for women in SMS, and we are sitting at 1.1 or roughly 1.2% for persons with disabilities. And the challenge is basically the challenge of meeting the set minimum post requirements. And that's what we find. Most people have qualifications but do not then meet the requirements in terms of managerial experience. And then that then tends to delay the process. At times you find that you are about to appoint, and then the counter, they are already in the pipeline in other areas where then this our process is used as a springboard to counter in other areas, and then the whole process has to start afresh. But for me, people with disabilities, there's also the issues of flexibility and sensitivities around the persons with disabilities. While we are also acknowledging the fact of possible stigma around persons with disabilities, but there's also the issue of office-bound work. Yes, you would find that you can have persons with disabilities appointed, but when it comes to off-site, where there's as a way of also encouraging efficiencies within the organization and integrating all systems in the organization to improve efficiency and effectiveness of our deliverables. We have a number of modules, Chair, but you will see that also for business automation and ICT solutions. These are not quota targets, but we are basically saying in terms of our progress, we have there's an e-leave, it's training, and S&T is also being rolled out, and there's a system and the system being tested. Also the list portal and list portfolio, which is now the core business, is also earmarked and is also being tested, as well as approving the project charter, which then improves your project management, as well as planning for projects, is also underway. And project implementation on the solutions for digitization, you digitize the project planning. Again, you can see the link between the automation and the solution for digitization. Service providers have been sourced, so that we then get the best out of it that then meets the requirements to improve those efficiencies, as well as ensuring that the steering committees that sit in this sit on a regular basis to fast track these processes. Because if the steering committee does not sit and the performance and the reports do not get through into the system, it also delays the appointment of the service provider, as well as testing and eventually the rollout of the system. Program 2 intergovernmental, I'll move with speed now. Program 2 intergovernmental coordination is two programs. One is the intergovernmental relations. The second one is professional services, Chair. So what we're doing basically is that we have a five-year sector plan where we work with the provinces as well as the municipalities, particularly SALGA, as well as contributing to the municipal infrastructure grant, as well as ensuring that we also contribute to the DDM model, district development model. So these two indicators of approved sector plan and sector performance report, they merely capture the essence of what the extent on the operations of the class of the sector in relation to infrastructure, in relation to construction, in relation to policy related matters, which will include Public Works Act, because that was also, because between national and provincial there are GIAMA matters, and then in respect to issues of skills development, where we also rope in the entities that will also assist in the skills, as well as overall infrastructure through ESA, working together with the Office of the Premier. So that is captured in those documents to ensure the state of our delivery of infrastructure within the sector. Then in terms of beneficiaries participating in the skills pipeline, also working with the entities, is also looking at the value chain from the schools up until they become professionals, so they become part of the pipeline. And the presentation that we made yesterday, Chair, to the committee on the HR strategy, we also highlighted on also how we use these beneficiaries to also complement the existing capacity in the organization, particularly in the core areas of PMTE, FM, construction, and this basically is the skills pipeline that then seeks to address those issues. And then in the soft skills, they are also exposing them to the operations of the public sector, be it in the internship, as well as awarding them within the built environment in terms of the award bursaries, as well as being exposed to the operations of the organizations where we have a number of interns that then will deal with the administrative aspects in the organization. And then they become exposed as a way of an on-the-job training, so that they become employable with this experience that they have received or gained from the department. In relation to Program 3, Expanded Public Works, is one report that we normally report. So every report, there are reports that we present on a quarterly basis. But what we then also express, Chair and members of the committee, are the work opportunities that have been reported that will be contained in that report. So we basically have 358,000 work opportunities that have been created across all the four sectors, environment, infrastructure, land state, as well as social sector. And then those are then broken down in terms of what then constitutes those three. Or in the environmental sector, 77,000, infrastructure sector, 146,000, the land state sector, 14,000, roughly 15,000, and the previous financial year, which then also continued in this current financial year, was to ensure that we develop the bill at least for internal consumption, internal consultation, and then also use it for external consultation, then eventually pass it on to the second layer, which is basically through the parliamentary processes, and then eventually will shape the public hearing. So that has been developed in terms of the bill. So there's quite a number of issues that are coming through in terms of the bill for the consultations. Consultations are still continuing internally in the department, as well as working with the client department. There are certain elements, Chair and members of the committee, that have come through. PS Public Service Commission also had an interest. They had a roundtable on functional accommodation, where they raised a number of issues, particularly from a planning point of view, in terms of the planning of accommodation, the capacity within the state, and also in driving that, as well as issues around the leasing. And all of those issues were looked into from a constitutional point of view, particularly Section 217 from a procurement point of view, as well as Section 195 of the Constitution, in relation to an effective public sector. And those are now have been embedded into the discussions of the development of the bill. There was also issues raised by the Auditor General on the month-to-month leases, the issues around the relationship we have with the client departments, and also questioning the Kiama in relation to whether Kiama is a management tool to effectively deliver on, or is simply a compliance document where we simply comply. So those are now being consolidated into this development, and that is what we say is happening in terms of internal consultation, looking at all those inputs from various stakeholders and ensuring that we then consolidate them into a document that can be presented to the next level, cabinet as well as parliament. CIDP amendment is not a quota target, but there have been consultations with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Office of State Law Advisors, as well as National Treasury on some of the areas that will be contributing to the finalization of the bill, the amendment of the CIDP. Infrastructure Development Act, a business case has for establishment of ESA. Now, this speaks particularly with ESA being established as an entity. It was submitted to the Minister of Finance and Public Service Administration, who will then advise on the constitutional as well as the legal framework and within the public sector on the establishment of ESA as an entity of the state, driving primarily infrastructure aspect and coordinating around infrastructure for the entire country. Then overall as well is that there are six strategic integrated projects that were gazetted in 2020. They continue to be rolled out by ESA, and then those are presented at the PSDC as well as submitted the report to presidency in relation to the extent of delivery on the SIPs. There are some SIPs that are already in the Minister's Performance Agreement, which we are consolidating the progress thereof, and then at the request of the Portfolio Committee, we will be also be presenting the extent in relation to the progress on SIPs, especially the ones that are within the ambit and confines of the Department of Public Works in relation to the Minister's Performance Agreement, over and above the SIPs that would have been presented by ESA. So that can be done. In relation to the repeals, a process where we're looking at repealing or amending old laws that may conflict with the current approach, a submission has been made where we need to look at authorization of the draft public works general laws and repeal bill for consideration by cabinet. So that draft has been submitted so that then it gets gazetted. There are certain areas that have been identified where we need to repeal certain acts that are actually in conflict with what we're currently doing. Prestige is basically providing support to presidential initiatives or planned state events, which will also include funeral.
disconnected, Chair.
I can hear that we lost Mr. Mahangu. Is he out of the meeting or?
Am I here, Chair?
He's yeah, still in the meeting, Chair.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure where you lost me, sir. Chair, I'm not sure where you lost me. I just realized I was muted.
I know. I think you know, it's just 1 point.
Okay. Okay. I'll continue from Prestige, Chair. So, Prestige, we already have two planned events that were supported, like your presidential infrastructure that we normally support for planned state events as well as funerals. There are a number of funerals that are taking place, and some of them are unplanned, Chair, like funerals. We can't plan for them. So in addition to what we have planned, we also report what we have not planned because there is a financial cost. But we do split this reporting for the purposes of ensuring that even if we have more unplanned, there's a financial implication to it, and therefore we have the mandate and the responsibility obligation to then provide that support. These other 200% movable assets and 20%, these are basically efficiencies within how we then provide that support within 60 days. So it means at the request of the whether parliament or parliamentarians, we need to provide those assets in the parliamentary villages, in parliament precinct within 60 working days after approval by the client. So we strive to deliver within 60 days. We had an engagement with correctional services, providing particularly the provision of furniture, where we can lower the cost of service providers by ensuring that we work within the government machinery in providing those assets. So there was a delay in procuring process because we also rely on the availability as well as the ability to deliver on time for correctional services as well, while we also balance with other sectors within government on provision of assets. Chair, the next one is finance. As I indicated earlier, that if you look at it, it's 21% of 27, which gives you 77, which is below that. It is not green in terms of our 90%, although it's 77% when you compare 21 and 27. Now, the challenges here, again, would be explained when the PMTE finance explains, but it's basically around the issues of municipal services, goods and services underspending, as well as refurbishments underspending. The issues are basically around underspending, which will be emphasized in the presentation on finance. Real estate investment services is basically operational. In what we've done, we've engaged. We need to submit, according to GIAMA, as the CM, cost custodian asset management, but that will be informed by an assessment of all the needs that the client departments would have provided. Now, it's a regulated target because it has to be submitted in the second quarter. So what we normally do in quarter one, we engage the client departments on their needs. We then also advise, and then so far we've supported 8 smaller departments. Other departments which have entities, they work together through one department and the entities. Others, we have to work with the different entities within that mother department. So we have compiled 8 small ones, and then there are quite a number of chapters that we compiled for each client department, the chapter on their needs, and then that will then be submitted to National Treasury for purposes of assessment as well as allocation of funds. Government precinct as well, terms of references were developed, particularly in support of small city principles, as well as City of Joburg and Kunye precinct. And then we also initiated an SCM process to appoint professional services to provide, to develop these precincts, this plan for the precincts, and ensuring that the precincts also best serve and meet the requirements of your smart city principles as well as your social plan. Construction project management. These are the five indicators. In terms of the designs and solutions identified, we're sitting at 27 designs out of 35, giving us 77%. Yes, we have challenges in terms of the scope of work, which came very late in determining these designs. Then to circumvent that or to speed up the process, we then had to have our in-house professional services, in this case, the architectural services, to also come in and assist in this thing. Unfortunately, we did not complete on time, and then that also delayed the completion of these designs within a short space of time. So we do have in-house architectural services. We also source from the others to also assist in that regard. Number of projects, the next three indicators are efficiency as well as completion. Number of projects contracted within agreed period time and budget, we're sitting at 7 out of 12 in terms of the period. Termination of contracts due to performance, cash flow issues of contractors, the delays on site, materials, and then there's also time pressures that have also been expressed by contractors. And these are some of the areas where, due to the delays and poor contractors, and also in the bid to improve as well as move service delivery, this is where now the Minister and Deputy Minister have been on the ground and on site to try and calm the situation where there are challenges and also intervene where there's a possible way of speeding up these processes. So in terms of construction, these are some of the areas where the intervention of our principals has also been effective in trying to put in place controls and systems to try and deliver as fast as possible and also address issues of your business forums as well as other unintended consequences that we often face. Now, in terms of infrastructure projects that have been completed, 13 that have been completed, some of them have been terminated in terms of contractors due to poor performance. They are linked to completion of projects, the time and budget, as well as extension of time. Others are not completed on time, therefore they will apply for an extension, and then the extension also is on the time as well as on the budget and eventually affects the completion period. In terms of real estate management services, the leasing portfolio, a number of indicators are known for quarter one. If you look at the gray parts in terms of private leases reduced within the security cluster, the savings that have been realized and the changes in the revenue generation. However, we are reporting that on a quarterly basis as we compile this, because these are live figures that change every minute. We are saying at the time of reporting and producing this report to Parliament, in relation to private leases and realization of savings, we're sitting at 280 million at the time. And we are looking at a target of 200 million. So already you can see that we are already above that target of 200 million. And we are looking at more of these being realized or in the next couple of quarters or months. 20% is our target in terms of the baseline for the revenue generated. We're already sitting at 21%. These are also coming from the previous financial years, Chair, in response to some of the audit issues in terms of how we then deal with the issues of leasing, especially when we were the concerns on month to month where we had a significant reduction of leases from 728. We're now talking about 130 something is left, which basically is about a 70%, over 70% reduction of those leases. So as you go on, it also helps you to actually realize the savings over the long term. So those initiatives that were put in place in previous in response to the audit findings are now starting to bear fruit in terms of us realizing as well as churning out that revenue or generating that revenue. In terms of number of vacant unutilized state-owned properties, we are sitting at 17 out of 35. This is a process, it's a long process, a lengthy process of approving, letting out in terms of looking at the asset itself, the vacant state, the condition of that, as well as engaging on the process of eventually letting it out. So it's quite a lengthy process, the to-ing and fro-ing between the department and those that have requested that. In terms of, we are working with the Department of Gauteng, the DSD, Department of Social social development and the infrastructure development in Gauteng, as well as other provinces, Eastern Cape, KZN, Limpopo, and Gauteng, where we say we provide support in terms of unutilized vacant state-owned properties that can be let out for GBV purposes or to house the victims of GBV. So we have to engage. It's a government-to-government business, so it's engagement on the basis of those user agreements between the government, and that tends to take long. On the one hand is the agreement in terms of at the time of the need, what is the extent of the need in terms of the GBV concerns, and as well as ensuring that those facilities that have been made available for also are in a suitable condition to actually house, and they vary in terms of the cases of GBV. So the user agreements will be based on having gone through that process of identification, as well as ensuring that we are able to support with the condition, the appropriate condition of the facility to then assist the victims of GBV. So we have not concluded on those user agreements, still engaging, so no agreement has been concluded at this time. We also support transformation, Chair and members of the committee, in terms of the leases that are awarded to companies in the categories A, B, in terms of BEE, as well as companies in the BEE, triple BEE, on level 4 and above. So we are very low on the categories A, B, and D in terms of property empowerment policy. That also stems from the judgment in terms of the court's constitutional. Yes, it may have been quite some time now, but it does affect in terms of your ratings from as procurement point of view, 80-20-90-10 approach, as well as, and then that also has an impact in terms of being deliberate on how we then render these services to award to companies with this. But there's an internal arrangement or discussion on contract management, as well as improving on our circulars on how we then work within the confines of the law, as well as ensuring that we balance that transformation agenda within that. Working together with CIDB, who also in the space, as well as other role players within the space, to ensure that we also meet the transformation agenda. But we're sitting at 12%. 2 of 17 have been let out to BEE, which is level 4 and above, which is the target that has been achieved as well. That also goes back to the previous financial years, where there were challenges in relation to the controls and how we then process this. Now, these are the fruits. We're bearing the fruits of the controls that have been put in place as tested in the previous financial year. And then now we are gaining momentum in understanding the modalities of those, and hence the 12% up against the 3% that we have targeted. Hectares of land, Chair, we are basically not yet released hectares of land in terms of the quantum of 2,531 hectares that we earmarked for quarter one. There's an engagement where we are rooted the engagements between the principals that will have to agree on the land redistribution, and then there's also issues of land reforms. So there will be an engagement between the Minister of Finance as well as others where we engage with the recipient of the land. So the agreements are still en route in terms of the release of land. But we are earmarking two land parcels measuring 3,862 hectares, which will then be, now if that then is done even tomorrow, it will have achieved the target against 2.5. So the amount has been identified and is en route to actually complete it. In terms of asset register, Chair, I do allude to the fact that we are now working national and provincial departments into a single repository as a way of looking at an integrated asset register. We have engaged with the three provinces, Western Cape, Northern Cape, and Limpopo, three provinces that are actually contributing to that. In terms of assessing the asset register for compliance. And beyond that, we also look at physical verification of the of those assets through validated systems and physical verification. In our target for quarter one, 5,568, we're sitting at 88%, or rather 4,912. Chair, this also comes from the presentation that was made last week to the portfolio committee, where we looked at the strategies and how then to move the real deficiency. So I won't go into detail. The presentation, thorough presentation was done in that regard, Chair. And then last program, Chair, is facilities management. Three programs, three key KPIs, conditions assessed on prioritized vacant properties. And then we also look at the components that we also assess, as well as the, how do we then manage your how do we manage your maintenance in terms of the process, procedures, as well as strategies. In this case, we're looking at 67 preventative maintenance contracts that we have in place, where now we emphasize that we move from reactive to preventative maintenance and ensure that those are on site and are able to identify issues before they even are reported by the client department. And by the time, what we're trying to move against now is client should not be reporting challenges, but instead client should be writing back to us to thank for services that have been rendered in that. So that's the kind of mentality that will then contribute to the dignified client experience outcome, where it's more of client thanking and also writing back on the services that we've rendered rather than the complaints. And these contracts are putting in place to ensure that we then achieve in that. So Chair, overall, this is the level of performance that then contributes to the 41 that I presented earlier on, Chair. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson, members of the portfolio committee, DM, acting DG and colleagues. I'll be presenting the main vote, financial performance, and Juanita Prince will then present financial performance of the PMTE. She is with me. Chairperson, for the main vote, we have 8.7 billion and we spent 1.6 billion for the first quarter, with a balance of a budget of 7 billion after the spending. So in terms of program administration, which is program one, the spending was 21%, with a variance of minus 184, which I'll explain later. Then intergovernmental, the spending was 18%. EPWP was 9%. For EPWP, Chair, the variance, that is 299 million, is mainly the amount that was not finalized on time, but that has been resolved. That payment has already been made, so it's 263 million in particular for that huge variance that we have to deal with. For program four, the spending is 26%. The variance is mainly due to project preparation. There were a lot of conditions that Treasury set out before we could transfer the money to IDC for project preparation. That has been concluded, Chairperson. So ISA will begin to spend that money because we had to comply with all the conditions that Treasury set, because this is a new program for the department. A lot of work has to be put in place to make sure that we comply with the conditions that were set. On Prestige, Chair, the spending is 25%, which is not worrying. So the overall spending for main vote is sitting at 19%, which is below the guidelines of 25%. Luaz, if you can move to the next slide. So this is just a trend which explains what I've already presented. You can proceed, Luazi. Yeah, in terms of economic classification, on compensation of employees, we have a budget of 587 million and the spending was 129 million. leaving us with a balance of 158 million that we still need to spend throughout the year. The percentage on spending is 22%. So in terms of the drawings, we spent more than what we projected at the beginning of the year. Chairperson and members, normally we submit cash flow projection to Treasurer around Feb. So there was an increase on salaries, which was not anticipated at a time when we submitted our cash flow projections. As a result, then we have a negative of 4 million, but that has been addressed for the next quarter. So we won't see that in the next quarter. For goods and services, the budget is 694 million. We spent 80 million, and the balance is 614 million, which will be spent throughout the year. Then in terms of percentage, we are at 12%. The main reason for the variance is the ESA, the project preparation that I've already explained, because it basically was supposed to pay about 50 million for project preparation, because we must pay quarterly in advance. But the conditions, as I said, have been already complied with, so we'll start releasing that money for project preparation. And for transfers and subsidies, the budget is 7.5 billion. We spend 1.5 billion, which then is 20% spending against the budget. The variance is 315. The significant amount there is the EPWP, the 263 million that has already been explained. And the other also significant amount that caused underspending in that area is also EPWP of 23 million for integrated grant, because some institutions do not comply with DORA, so we had to then delay processing payments because they don't comply with DORA. However, EPWP continue to engage those institutions in terms of compliance. And also what also delay cause the huge underspending included in that 315 million is 30 million for Commonwealth War Graves Commission that we're supposed to pay. There was a problem with the exchange rate. We had to request National Treasury to approve, because at the time of a budget, we did not anticipate that the exchange rate would be, but so we had to apply to National Treasury, and that problem was solved in July. So in the next quarter, we won't have a similar problem. For machinery and equipment, we ordered lots of computers and equipment, so we had to pay them in line with the 30 days, not to say we don't have a budget. So in terms of the guidelines, we spent more than what we projected. However, it's still fine. We are not overspending in that area. If you can move, Loise. You can move, Loise. I've already explained this. In terms of the notes, have already indicated all the reasons for underspending. I don't have to go into details on them. You can proceed on them. You can proceed, Loise. I've already explained all the narrative. Yes, thank you. Then, no, go back, Loise. Go back to transfers and subsidies. Thank you. So for transfers and subsidies, Chairperson, as I indicated earlier on, we have a budget of 7.5 billion. We spent 1.5 billion, which is 20% spending. So these are the details of the transfers. I thought maybe let me highlight the main significant transfers that we do. It's for the PMTE, where we spend 27%, it's 4.4 billion. Also for the non-state sector, I've already explained on the non-state sector, it will begin to improve as I have already highlighted. I think those are the only areas that I wanted to highlight. Common one, two, or three, I've already explained that one, why it's even zero. So if you can move on. Okay, so I will now hand over to Juanita Prinsloo to take us through the financial performance for PMTD. Over to you.
Good morning, Chi. Good morning, Deputy Minister, Acting DG, and other members of the committee. I will be taking you through the financial performance of the PMTE as of the end of June, which is the end of the first quarter. Maybe just to remind members again, when we presented the budget in the beginning of the year, we have reduced our revenue projections, have reduced significantly from our original E&E budget. This is mainly due to the itemized billing being approved for Cycle 5, where correctional services specifically have reduced their budget by nearly 50%. So you will see that although our accommodation charges stayed under 6 billion rand, our projection in the beginning of the year, we had to reduce this to 700 million, which now gives us a revised budget of 5.3 billion, of which at the end of June, we've only received 1 billion rand, which is 19% of the budgeted revenue. This is a concern because this is our major revenue generation item. The second one is the augmentation. First one is state-owned accommodation charges. The private leases, although that is 5.5 billion, is a recoverable budget, and that budget is used just like that for private leases. Again, it's not something that we can utilize in the entity for something else. When I get to the expenditure, you will see what is the impact on our repairs and refurbishment. So we have only received 19% on state-owned accommodation charges. On most of the other items, we've received on average 20-21%, except municipal services management fees. This one has also been adjusted downwards, based on the consumption and the estimates that we are projecting on municipal services. We are in the process of devolving this function totally to client departments, and that therefore this budget is steadily decreasing. On the augmentation, as was already presented in the DPW main vote, the augmentation we received from DPW is 4.4 billion rand. And we have received 27%. That was the first payment that we received from them. And therefore, the average of the revenue has increased then to 22%. We can move. This is a little bit higher than last year when we were at 17%. When we look at the expenditure against that revenue, you will see that the original budget was 18.2 billion, as was our revenue projection, but this has decreased to 17.6 billion rand, and the main reductions was under repair, where we had to reduce the budget by 333 million, and under refurbishment, where we had to reduce the budget by 559 million. So the reduction in accommodation charges has a direct impact on our ability to repair and refurbish our buildings. Of this revised budget of 17.6 billion, at the end of June we spent 3.7 billion, which is 21% of the projected budget, in line also with the revenue that we received for the same period. Most of the items are also on average between 20 and 23% spending. The main concern is the maintenance that is high because of the repair projects that is not really coming into fruition at this stage. So you will see that repair budget is only at 10%, while our maintenance budget is at 50%, which is in line with where our expenditure was last year, actually a little bit lower. Our property rights budget is low at 23%. It's actually in line with the 25%, but it stays low at this time of the year because we are still waiting for the municipal financial year starts in July, and then we receive only invoices for the next financial year. We will definitely spend all of that funding. Our main concern is under capital payments, which is mostly infrastructure. Refurbishments is at 18%, DPW capital at 12%. This has increased in future months, but this was the situation at June. Machinery and equipment, we were a little bit ahead as at the end of June, but this has corrected itself. It is just the timing of the receiving of the orders and the payment of the invoices that has caused this. Compensation of employees, if I could just maybe also mention that one, we were at 22%, which is a little bit lower than we should be at the end of June, because we still have vacancies, but we are projecting to spend most of this funding by the end of the financial year. So, I think we can move the slides. I think I have addressed everything in the narrative. If we can just then look at the outstanding balances as at 30 June. As I've already indicated, that accommodation charges state-owned is a concern. We have, the biggest outstanding balance at this stage is municipal services, and this has been a trend over the last few years. It's been building up. You'll see that the outstanding amount for prior years on municipal services was 5.7 billion. Of the 8.6 billion that is outstanding for the prior year. We've invoiced this year close to 4 billion rand, and we have received 2.4 billion, which is a 60% recovery rate. So as at the end of June, our outstanding debt was 10.2 billion, of which the biggest amount was against municipal services and then followed by state-owned accommodation charges. We can move to the next slide. This is age analysis of the amount that we indicated just now of the 10.2 billion rand that is outstanding in total. 84% of this amount relates to prior years, close to 8.6 billion, whereas for this financial year, we have 1.6 billion rand outstanding, which is 16% of the total debtors book. We can move. We are not going to present the following two slides because it was presented in Friday's meeting. I think that has been the end of our performance. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much. Ms. Suben, Ms. Kasitole, and Lwazi, for this presentation. I believe that the Deputy Minister has since joined us now. I now invite the honourable members to raise comments, questions in this report. Let me look. I don't see any hands. Maybe it's me or what? Okay. Honorable Siwisa will be the first one, followed by Honorable Matebula, followed by Honorable Tring. I see only those three hands. For now, Honorable Siwisa, followed by Honorable Matebula, followed by Honorable Tring, followed by Honorable Mashele, in that order, Honorable Members.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. Apologies, my voice is a bit rusty, Chair. The weather is not good, that's where I am. Chair, I see there's a slight improvement, but I'm still not satisfied. Because this is a department that has been there for so many years. And I think over the years, they should have come with better strategies on how to do consequence management. And I'm concerned also about the decrease in amount that has been reflected on the PMTE. I think I've been raising my issues with PMTE for so long, and which means that at some point PMTE won't be able to perform its functions properly if there's no funding that goes towards them. The issue of DPWI not meeting its targets, even though if you compare the previous financial year and this year, there's maybe you can say there is an improvement, but still they're not meeting their targets. The issue of compliance is still there. The legal issues are still being mentioned, that they are still struggling to finalize legal issues. I think it's taking people to disciplinary and finalizing everything that's to do with fraud and whatever that happens in the department. The poor performing contractors, have they been blacklisted? What are their names and how many projects were they actually given for termination of their contracts with the Department of Public Works? Because if we speak about the extension of a project, we speak about more money being spent and still the target is not going to be met. Because the experience that we have, we'll be told that the project is finished or a project is at stage 4. And some of us, when you go around, you find that you get to find out that nothing has happened, or it's not even started since there's been cleanup, or the building is not even where it's supposed to be at that moment. So what are the consequence management that are being put in place to ensure that actually contractors do what needs to be done? And then under unutilized vacant space on properties, what are the reasons for the slow letting out, and how are they going to attend to this? Because it's a great concern also to me. The issue of the property empowerment policy that was applied, and then the Constitutional Court rendered them unconstitutional. How did the department arrive to a point of applying a policy where it's not supposed to be applied? And how are they going to solve? Because now it seems as if those categories that they've mentioned, they can't apply the property empowerment policy on them. So how are they going to resolve to ensure that a proper policy is put in place to make sure that category A, B, and D, and if they can explain what is the difference between all these categories? Chair, when you speak about maintenance of property, and the department says now they are not being reactive, but they are becoming proactive. The ablution system in Acacia Park is still a problem, and it's not an internal one. It's outside the boundaries of Acacia Park. And what is the department doing about that? If they are speaking about being proactive, the problem should have been solved. I struggled with a blocked toilet over the weekend when I was in Cape Town. And it says to me the problem has not been solved yet. And it's not inside the park, it's outside. So if we speak about proactive, how are we solving the ablution system that's always blocking in Acacia Park? Those are my questions only for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Siwisa. Honorable Matebula.
Thank you very much, Chair. My greetings to you, to the Deputy Minister, fellow colleagues and the administration here. Chair, well, one, I just want to check with regard to the issue of corruption and also ethical misconduct that the department is referring to, that they are saying that they are actually basing their percentage or their performance based on perception. They say that the more perception you have about misconduct or corruption, is the more people view this department as being corrupt. Now, I want chair to check that, you know, because perception is something else, and also something that is happening as per the fact is another thing. Now, I want them to indicate to us as to whether or not issues of corruption are there, and issues of, I think it's misconduct or that, what's the written, but I think it's an issue of misconduct. Is it an issue that is bothering the department, and how big is it, and how does it affect the department itself as a matter that has been included here as part of this report? Because we want to know, not the perception per se. Hence I say perception is something else. But also on the issue of 60 days rule of thumb, that I think that they are doing quite very well in dealing with issues of disciplinary hearing. I see that they are at 86. I know that they've indicated that for them to be on the green, because now they are on the yellow, they need to be at least 95%. But my view is that they are doing very well, Chair. And if they can reach that 95%, 100%, I think that will be a bonus. But I must also indicate, Chair, that we all know the tricks. We all know how those that conduct themselves wrongfully, and when they face disciplinary hearing, how they can abuse the processes and the laws that are there, that are governing issues of disciplinary hearing. So I just wanted to say that there is something that is good that they are doing, despite the fact that we are also taking in cognizance of the fact that there are frustrations that they are faced with. And that is spending. The issue of spending is quite worrying. As of September, they have spent, I think the first quarter is 19%, if I'm not mistaken. And as of September, is 26%. Now, Chair, if this trend, the trend goes with either the 26% in the second quarter and first quarter overall pending, spending being 19%, how do they expect that they would reach 100%? Because if you calculate this 19% per quarter, you will be far below 100%. And my biggest worry is that we have issues of service delivery. We've got programs in place that have been put in place that need money. And here we are understanding. And this, in my view, does not only affect us as a department, but also it affects the people who matter the most, who are expected this money to be spent on them. But again, say, I see that the department is also saying, no, we ask for so much, and we're under-allocated with so much. Now, how do you balance the two? That you ask this money, this big amount of money, but you are still underspending. You see, for me, it's clashing with what they want and also how they spend money. I think they need to try and improve that and come up with mechanisms, because we don't expect to see money going back to treasure simply because we have deprived our people service delivery because of, of us as a department unable to spend on projects that we have projected for the last financial year into this financial year or for the next coming 5 years. So we have not been, if we are not able to do that in ensuring that we spend the money as allocated to us, Chair, I must emphasize the fact that we are not only doing a disservice to the department, but we are also doing that to our people. Lastly, Chair, there's an issue that we are being owed in the main by municipalities an amount of 10 billion. But there's no indication as to how are they going to try and recoup that money. My understanding is that municipalities have a budget. And if they have got a budget, they must be able to pay. If they don't pay, there are legal avenues that are there for us, to follow in order to ensure that municipalities, they pay what is owed to us. Because what is owed to us is not only owed to us, but it's also owed to our people. So, and like I have indicated that municipalities have got budgets. What do they do with the budget which is supposed to be used to pay the debt to our department? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Honorable Matebula. Honorable Tring?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just a few questions of clarity from my side with regards to slide 10. Slide 10 speaks to the overview of performance, and when one looks at, I think, Program 9, Program 9 has an indicator, a number there of 40. If that number is a reflection of the percentage, and I thought that that's what I heard, because those numbers are the accumulation, if you take the accumulation of all of those numbers, 33, 100, 133, up to 67, and you look at your barometer, it sits at 41%. So if 40 is one of the indicators that was given for Program 9, and yet it is a yellow indicator that was given, yellow is 50 and above. So I don't know whether that was an error or if there's another explanation, not unless that 40 is another number. So if I could just get some clarity with regards to the 40 on Program 9. Secondly, Chair, on slide 16, the Public Works Bill timeline. It's indicated that there are going to be consultations that are going to be undertaken with the different stakeholders. You correctly indicated, Chair, that we've all been speaking about the Public Works Bill, and this Public Works Bill is essential for the efficient operation and the efficient functioning of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, particularly with regards to the challenges that we face with client departments and amongst other things. So is there a particular timeline with regards to when those consultations with the stakeholders are going to conclude? Because there's no timeline given with regards to when that's going to happen, which affects, Chair, what you rightfully expressed as a concern by this department at the outset, which affects then the outcome and the time by which this Public Works Bill is finally going to be actually dealt with. Then, Chair, slide 19, on the PMT administration, there's a number of, if one looks at the comments on performances, almost all of those comments in terms of repairs, municipal services, goods and services, and refurbishments, almost all of those particular comments are and items, repairs to, right, to refurbishments are below target. The targets are not being met. So if one looks at just repair, it's at 10% versus the projected 20%. Now that's a 50% under target for repairs. And Chair, if you are not repairing 50% of your target, 50% of your buildings that are in need of repairs, that's a major concern. And so even though we have a yellow indicator, but I'm concerned, Chair, that, you know, we may be just presenting a good face and playing with our numbers so that we can actually present a good face. So, you know, if one looks at refurbishments, expenditure at 18% below, and that's a little bit better, below the guideline of 20%, but clearly there's a concern where our targets are not being met, and this is something that's going to come back to bite us, and in particular PMTE at the end of the day. And then the non-payment by our client departments with your debtor age analysis sitting at 1.5 billion. Again, it's another concern. And so where you have client departments that are not coming to the party and not keeping their side of the commitment, clearly it also speaks to a lack of will, but also you have loopholes, and I mentioned this, I think, in one of our previous meetings, where if there are no repercussions, if there are no consequences to non-payment, we're going to have this particular challenge in perpetuity, and so it is a concern. But my question is, what interventions are in place to recover the debt? And I want to agree, in conclusion, Chair, I want to agree with Honourable Matabula on the aspect of underspending versus the requested budget. I think that in the light of our high unemployment, poverty rates in South Africa, increase inequality, when we see underspending, and budget has been allocated, taxpayers' money has been allocated to increase service delivery, has been allocated to improve employment where there are vacancies, and we sit with this particular money and we don't spend it. In my view, Chair, it's a slap in the face, particularly of the millions of South Africans who are struggling during this difficult economic period that we are facing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable King, Honourable Mashele.
Thank you very much, Chair. Looking to yourself, fellow committee members, and the PM and the department. I am connecting while I'm on the road because of connectivity problem. Okay, let me first welcome the presentation by the department, which paints the picture third issue I want to get into is on the issue of the delay of some trials, particularly on the IDT issue, which speaks to EPWP. Does the department understand, or do they know, or probably what is the impact of these delays of transfer to the masses of the poor people on the ground who rely largely on these odd jobs that EPWP create? What is the impact of this delay? Lastly, Chair, the understanding of the department. What is the impact of this understanding? Crisis traders, trade in the country. What is the understanding of the department, Deputy Minister, and your top management when you have understand in the current turmoil that we're facing as a country? What do you think is your contribution towards that, towards poverty alleviation or increasing it? So I think one can stop there with those focus. Maybe I'll come back once the department has responded and I follow up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mashale. Firstly, I would like to apologize in saying that, in fact, in thanking Miss Zuben, I've been corrected that the person who was presenting was Miss Prinsloo. Sincere apologies. I think the voices are more or less the same. Apologies on that one. I the many of my colleagues have covered me. I think also I did raise some issues in the welcoming remarks for today's meeting. The reality is that with a country that is facing high rate of unemployment and you are delaying the payout to especially to EPWP, that is the transfer of grants, knowing full well of course that there are processes to be followed, but the reality is that the majority of the, in fact the beneficiaries of EPWP are one of the most disadvantaged group in terms of the population in our communities. So I think Honorable Mashele has asked what is the impact, but mine would be what are we doing as the department in assisting that those NPOs or NGOs, those departments in provinces, how do we assist them to ensure that they submit in time, they then get their transfers in time. So I think those that are benefiting from the EPWP are not the ones that are adversely affected by all these delays in transfers. So mine would be that. And lastly, the reality is that when it comes to understanding, especially in refurbishment and all that, it also points on the fact that something that we have said as the portfolio committee several times, that when it comes to maintenance, the department is reacting. There is no program that is there
to ensure that repairs and maintenance are done in a routine manner. There is a plan that is in place to ensure that repairs and maintenance. You can't understand that one if you have a plan in place that it has to be done routinely. You don't have to react that there is something damaged in that building. That's when then you come in as the department. So that one is a comment. Then invite the department to respond to all these comments that have been raised by honourable members. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, honourable members, for the questions. I will try to answer the more generic questions, and then I will request then my colleagues to assist me with the more technical questions. Chairperson, on Honourable Suwisa, there was a question about the delay in the letting out. I acknowledged, Honourable Suwisa, there was an unprecedented delay on us implementing the letting out circular. But we can report today that the strategy has been approved, and we are due to go out on tender with the first batch on the 1st of October. And it's not a once-off thing. It's a lot of properties. We're not going to advertise everything all at once to ensure that we're able to manage the volumes that we receive. And then we're going to space it out through over a period until we reach the target properties that we want to let out. There was another question also from Honourable Suwisa on categories A, B, C, and D on our leasing property empowerment policy. I think she wanted to know what is the difference, what is category A, what is category B, C, and D. I don't have the specific details, but I've asked my colleague Roderick, who is in the platform, just to check for me. But in summary, is that category A is companies that are fully owned, fully empowered. So it's owned 100% by black individuals or companies. And then category B, I think, is between percentage 30 to percentage 51. Category A is from 51% to 100%. Category B is between 30 and 51% black ownership. Category C is a completely untransformed company. And then category D, we wanted to accommodate listed companies that were listed by black individuals and are using black asset management companies, and so that we are able to recognize the fact that a particular company was listed by an empowered company, and that is how category D came about. Honorable Suwisa also had a question around ablution facilities, the challenges that has been experienced in Acacia Park. It is true indeed, Honourable, that the ablution there is a challenge, and it is outside the estate, as you said. The bigger challenge there is that the land in which Acacia Park is called a wetland, so there's a huge engineering problem when the water levels rise that the municipality and our facilities management teams are working on. But in the meantime, what the team is doing, they try to pump out as much as they can. But unfortunately, it's a challenge that will probably persist until it's re-engineered in full to be able to cater for the type of environment the area is. Honorable Mashele asked a specific question to say, do we believe the PMTE will survive in its current form? Honorable Mashele, I think this is a bit of a challenging question, but I can attempt to answer it in the following manner, that the function that which the property management trading entity performs in government, which is government asset management, will not disappear. The function will remain. However, the issue of what form then the entity that is able to manage that, whether it reverts back to the Public Works Department as a department or it is done through the PMTE, that is where the issue of the form is taken. But why we find ourselves in this issue of payments and non-payments is a long at the long matter that is coming from the devolution of budgets, where we then as public works were put on the back foot to then depend on clients paying us for the services that we provide. So it's a bigger government question for me than it is a question that I can answer you today. Chair, I would like to then ask perhaps maybe finance to start with the question also from Honorable Mashele regarding the delays in transfers to entities like IDT, and our CPM colleagues can assist with the performance of contractors, and then Vazi will deal with the presentation related questions, especially from Honorable Tring as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I will respond on finance related questions. But that one, particularly Acting DG, I think EPWP can respond better. If you allow Ario to respond. But on the first question that Honorable Sims raised on the PMTE, the future of PMTE giving a decrease in the amount, we did present to Portfolio Committee last week about the same concern, and the committee made resolutions or recommendations to say maybe Treasury must be invited to this portfolio committee to deal with the issues of funding for PMTE, where we presented a shortfall with the asset portfolio that we are managing. So that matter is being attended to, and if the portfolio committee can also and help us with the recommendation that was made last week. But over and above that, Chairperson, there are discussions with National Treasury, and they are receiving attention to this issue. However, it comes to during the time when there are also cost containment. I don't think we are hopeful that in the next financial year we may see the increase in getting more money for PMTE. Maybe as the economy improves, we may begin to see an increase. But at this stage, I don't expect such. But discussion will be very important to make sure that when the economy improves, PMTE becomes the priority when Treasury allocate funding. Then the other matter that was raised by Honorable Matebula was the issue of the spending of 19% as he indicated that as September. But this report is for the first quarter, end of June 2023. So, but the concerns that he's raising are still valid, despite the fact that it's not September, the 19% is not for September, but it's for June. Just maybe to assist there, as an end of August, we're sitting at 47%, which is above the guidelines of 42% as an August. So there is an improvement. I thought, let me just clarify that part. There was another comment also around the municipal services. Actually, it's not municipalities that are owing us the 5 billion that Ms. Prinsloo raised, but is what we pay on behalf of clients' departments. The clients' departments that are not paying us, not that municipalities are the ones that are not paying. So as a department, we pay municipalities for the services, then clients are not paying us back. But there were also other questions by other members to see what interventions are we putting in place to make sure that there is an improvement on recovery. intervention has been put in place, but we are not. And that the portfolio committee last week even requested that we need to have a policy that can really force departments to pay. We are starting to look at that. We also engage national treasury for better such policy by non-by treasury through a directive, because having an internal policy client would not comply to our policy. But over and above that, we have referred certain departments to national treasury. The letter was being routed to the accounting office so that it can go to treasury, where clients are not paying us and we are requesting treasury to intervene, where treasury has an authority to withhold money for a specific department and direct it to us. So it's a legal framework that we are exploring. Actually, we are writing to national treasury because treasury regulations allow us to do that. Treasury has that authority to assist in that area. The other comment, I think the other comment was, Honorable Member Michelle, the impact. I think EPWP would have to respond on that, and CPM, because those are the areas where they are serious underspending, just to indicate the impact, because I do concur with the Honourable Member about this issue to say we need to understand the impact in our society as we underspend. Thank you very much, FNDC.
Thank you. Not sure whether is there anyone from the department that would like to respond?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Lazi, please continue.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yes, there are a few questions, Chair. Let me start with the comment made on the color coding. We do acknowledge it is a mistake, Chair. It's just a color coding issue. It should be amber, actually, not yellow. The one on the REMS is 40% of the targets achieved. Thank you for that comment, and we correct that. It doesn't change the level of performance. It's just an error in color coding, so we take the cognizance of that. The second one, Chair, was the issue around the question asked about surveys. The purpose, Chair, and the members of the committee, why we have surveys, just to collect and gather information about the understanding, opinions and impressions about how people view the organization. There are quite a number of categories within that survey questionnaire, seven categories, and each category has a number of questions. Now, the reason for conducting the survey, because there was a question about the survey, the perception is one thing, the actual is another. I'm bringing the two together in what we call the triangulation of this process. One is the reason for the surveys is to ensure that we have a better understanding of what we are perceived by the target audience, in this case, the departmental officials. The one that we recently conducted had about 432 participants in the survey to answer those. What we then picked from there, for instance, in the issues of do they report fraud, the question is, you find that some say yes, some say no, some say they don't know how to do that. Now, what it does is that it gives us then a sense of how do we then prepare fraud and corruption awareness programs in the organization on the basis of the strength or the basis of the responses. If it's an issue of code of conduct, whether it's personal, whether it's a workplace or it's within the, it also gives us a sense of how then do we then infuse the issues around code of conduct in relation to the public service regulation. So it informs various programs. Code of conduct, it informs labor relations. If it's contract management arising from the weaknesses in the contract supply chain, it informs the training methodology for the CM. If it it's an issue of fraud and awareness, it also informs the governance risk and compliance on awareness. So the surveys are based into that. The second leg is that once we have the surveys, the results of the surveys, we then also compare what is the actual. For instance, if there's less people reporting or understanding the fraud awareness or fraud, reporting on fraud, we then also compare with the anti-corruption hotline from the Public Service Commission to look at the ones that are related to public works, whether there's an element of the extent of which is reported. We then match the two to see how then do we strengthen our program of awareness in that regard. So that is the connection in the triangulation of the perception, the actual, and then how it informs the dead leg, which is the programs that we infuse. So the perceptions are based, so the surveys that help us to actually do that. There was a question on timelines for consultation on the Public Works Act. In the presentation, we said by Q4, we should be concluded this process. Now, if we take you to the preamble of the Act itself, there are quite a number of issues. When you look at equitable effectiveness and the uniform approach to government, that then speaks to the consolidation of some of the areas that come from India. And then there's also issues around Public Works Act as an overall umbrella, or as an umbrella across the whole of South Africa. So there are also intergovernmental relations aspects, particularly the four objects of intergovernment, of a coherent government. That's what we are also engaging with all the relevant stakeholders so that we minimize the conflict when we then provide the final product into this. Now, there was a meeting last month, Chair, with the work streams and provinces to consolidate on the inputs. They've been consolidated. There's another one coming in on the 3rd of October to consolidate on that inputs as well, internal engagements, as well as client departments. And the final product will then be assessed from December, January, February, to then consolidate all of these so that then it can be brought before Cabinet and Parliament. So that is the process in terms of the timelines and the extent of the engagements or the quantum of issues that are being raised. So those are the issues, Chair, and I think the others have been covered by the CFO and Chief. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair, I am Ignatius Ario from the EPWP. I'd like to provide a response on the comments. Thank you, Chair. Good morning to you and the members of the committee and Deputy Minister, Acting DG and the colleagues. In terms of the EPWP, the delay in transfer on the IDT was delays in the agenda, and we were working on clauses where we wanted to streamline certain reporting issues and compliance issues to make sure that we have better accountability, but we also ensure that the transfers going forward are faster without delays. We realize there is a negative impact in terms of the participants. What we've done is that we've worked with the IDT to come up with a catch-up plan to ensure that we don't underspend. So we've had additional participants recruited, and they started in July, soon after the transfer came through, and we foresee that going forward we are not going to have delays in transfers, and we'll be able to spend the whole allocation. In terms of the other departments, what we do is we normally have workshops. We have workshops every year with all the eligible departments to tell them what the requirements are, and also where there are delays, we engage one-on-one with the departments, help them in terms of the business plans, evaluation requirements in terms of the grants. We have since been able to resolve a lot of the challenges in terms of the transfers, and we have we've transferred a lot of the money that has been withheld so that we ensure that we minimize that. So proactively, we engage with the departments to ensure that they are aware of the compliance issues so that we minimize on the negative effects on participants. We are seeing better compliance from municipalities because of that, and we funds to be able to do that, continue doing that so that we don't have delays in terms of withholding. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Ario. Honourable members, these are the responses from the department on all the comments and questions that you have raised. Any follow-up questions?
Yes, Chair.
Okay, Honourable Mashele, Honourable Siwisa, in that order. Honourable Mashele, Honourable Siwisa.
Thanks, Chair. A quick comment. I think our pain as the portfolio committee in relation to the transfer is not whether you spend the money or not. It's the delay in transferring, which causes a delay in loading in beneficiaries into the program. We know that once you begin, you start and finish, and you finish the month. So to us, is the impact on the delay. I think one must comment on that the department should have systems in place such that we avoid such delays. And this does not happen again. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mashele. Honourable Siwisa.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, there's a question that I left out to ask. The two land parcels that have been identified, if the deal goes through, or if the process goes through, what is going to be done in those two land parcels, and where are they? Number two, Chair, I think I maybe, because I know last week I was in a meeting where it was said that a resolution was taken that a national treasurer must come to the committee to explain the issue of PMTE and the decrees. And the response that I got, and I think Honorable Matebula also raised it, and which is my concern again, that I think Honorable Matebula put it correctly, so to say that you do not spend money, and that has led to the consequences that National Treasury decided to cut the money. So the question that came up was, what are you going to do to redeem or to rescue the PMTE? What if National Treasury comes here and states reasons why they took the decision that they've taken? What is the department going to do to rescue PMTE? Because now we've dealt with IDT, we fought and IDT is where we wanted to be. Now we are dealing with PMTE. And I'm going to say it again, Chair. Little by little, PMT is going to be labeled useless, is going to be redeemed useless, is not going to be able to perform. I'm again going to raise my I know the explanation was given that Infrastructure South Africa is part of the department and we've got jurisdiction to do oversight and all of those things. But again, we have PMTE, Infrastructure SA is there, UHA is there. Now it seems as if more and more PMTE's responsibility is going to be, at the end of the day, is going to be rendered useless. PMTE is not going to feature anywhere else, because I want to know from the department, if National Treasury comes and says these are our reasons why we decreased the funding to PMTE and there's nothing we can do about it, what is the department going to do to rescue PMTE, to make sure that PMTE stays there? Because PMTE has been there for as long as I can remember, before ISA came in. So what is the department going to do to rescue PMTE? If it comes to a push that the National Treasury says, there's nothing we can do, this is the final decision. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Suisa. Can we then, the department respond to these two comments, the questions and comments from Honorable Mashele and Honorable Suisa?
Let me comment on the part of the comment that Honorable Suisa has raised. The issue of if Treasury refused, I think Chair must give context to this. We have 59,000 properties that are utilized by government departments, and we are not receiving the rate that we're supposed to receive. So ordinarily, we have a portfolio where we are leasing buildings from private sector. It's about 2,500 properties, but we are getting about 6 billion for that. So there is a huge gap if one were to compare the two, even the number of properties that we are providing to government. So Treasury is not to say they refuse, because this program, we started with them, with Treasury. They've agreed in terms of the method that we are using to calculate the user charges. But unfortunately, we cannot take these properties and give to other private sector to generate more revenue, because they are occupied by government departments. So the only source of income should come from government. So when Treasury approves, they consider the affordability by each department. They don't even approve to say maybe they approve 20 rand per square meter, even though the market may say 120 per square meter. They always basically say it's dependent on what the clients can afford. As I indicated even last week, there are even instances, which is part of this our presentation, which we did not present because we did it last week, where there are clients that are paying 14 rand per square meter. Actually, it's better. There are even clients that are paying 4 rand per square meter. What really can you do with 4 rand per square meter? Hence, then there was a view from the portfolio committee to say maybe Treasury need to come and explain this problem to the committee, so that we are also assisted. We have really communicated with National Treasury in this regard. But I must indicate, Chair, as much as we are engaging National Treasury, we also need to improve our capacity to spend, because if Treasury also were to increase this budget, we will have a capacity to spend this money, because currently we are not even spending what we are having. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Sitole. I see there is Richard's hand and Mr. Ario. Is it? Oh, not Richard, Rakat. No, I'm not sure who this one is, but I believe he's also from the department. Mr. Ario?
Thank you,
Chair. Thank you, Chairperson.
It's
a
short
term, if I... Okay. Whoever may start. Please continue.
This is Richard Samuel. Yeah, me. This is Richard Samuel. I'm the acting DDG, Facilities Management.
Okay.
And I think if I could just make some comments and responses. The summarized version of what many of the members have raised today was by the Honorable Member just before the CFO responded. But I think it's prudent of us as officials and incumbent on us just to report on some of the issues that we need to address in terms of where we see see improvements. And first of all, it's just to accept and appreciate greet the Deputy Minister and the DG and other honourable members. My apologies. The issues about converting reactive maintenance to proactive maintenance is something that we seriously raised about. Program 9 having an under expenditure doesn't give, wouldn't give confidence to the Portfolio Committee that we're not actually moving in that direction. What the Honourable Minister, the Deputy Minister, have directed us to do, and with their guidance we are looking at different ways and means of executing services and not to
I think we have lost you there.
They have an over reliance on the private sector. The
your
private
line
sector
is
does sometimes take us down, and more we're going to be influencing the network. Yeah, I'm going to try and move around. I think maybe I should just summarize. The network is not very stable where I am at TGO. I'm saying with the guidance of the Deputy Minister and the Minister, we are executing and instituting alternative forms of service delivery based on first track procurement in compliance with the PFMA. We will focus on women and youth contractors and use main contractor, nominated subcontractor service models. We want to expedite, especially the proactive maintenance. And we feel that we have a model that can that we can use to implement this, also using an in-source model. I think hopefully by the next meeting with the Portfolio Committee, we'll be able to show a lot of, or demonstrate a lot of progress in this regard. I think what Honourable Michelle mentioned about contractors who are failing, it's not so much the contractor of the failure, but the contractor he. And we need to do something about that. And like I say, without us relying too much on the private sector, we will also be using an in-source model to ensure that we execute this project more efficiently and more effectively. He also raised the issue about performing due diligence before we make tender awards. And that is something that we will certainly take very seriously, including projects that we're currently considering for members of parliament in Cape Town, where we don't want to just appoint any service provider that will render shoddy services. The issue about what the implications are on underspending, we understand underspending it impacts negatively on job creation, poverty alleviation, it stifles economic growth, and we need to do something as officials. That's our responsibility, and it's incumbent on us to do that. So I think those are just some of the additional points that I thought I needed to add, especially with regards to the last honourable member who raised these issues as not being adequately answered. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Ignatius Ariel from EPWP. Just to say we note the comment of Honourable Mashela, and we'll ensure that we avoid the delays, and also in terms of the transfers, we'll just continue to be proactive with public bodies to ensure that they comply fully with the requirements so that we avoid delays in transfers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you to these responses, but I must state clearly that it was really difficult to hear some of the responses, especially from Mr. Rochat, the acting DG for facility management, maybe because he indicated that he was in challenges of network. I don't know whether it is possible for him to write those responses so that we can share them with the committee. Really, your line was not really so clear. ADM and the Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I must first start by apologizing. I had a network connection this morning. They are doing maintenance and they cut the electric lines by mistake. So I apologize very much to yourself, Chair, and the committee. I'm the one who will do the closing remarks, Chair, as the Minister is still in Cabinet. I'd like to thank the committee very much for its comments and questions, which are very, very important, Chair. Especially on the EPWP, Chair, we understand very well the impact that the delay in EPWP implementation has to the beneficiaries and to the communities. And also to mention, Chair, that ours was to say as well that we need EPWP programs which have an exit strategy and which has an impact, so that we don't just have EPWP recipients that are being trained and there is no proper exit strategy, but understanding fully very well, Chair, that we cannot underspend on EPWP because of the services that it provides to the recipients. And that also the comments that were made in terms of PMTE, Chair, and that hopefully that the structure of PMTE, the vacancies, once they are filled, that it would change around the face of PMTE, because as much as the budget is not there, but also that we need the required skills and the proper personnel to be at PMTE, so that even though we spend and we have the structure running, that the impact of how the structure will deliver services is also in line with the budget that will be spent. In terms of the understanding, Chair, I must also comment on that, that the Minister has requested branches to bring up their 6 priorities in terms of programs. So once those programs start running in terms of what it is that is priority, looking at also, Chair, that there is the cost containment process in place, of which the Minister will meet all the DCGs tomorrow morning as well in that process, that whatever 6 priorities the branches implement, it will be not just to spend, but also to spend in line with programs that have an impact in terms of delivering services and in terms of what the programs are meant and supposed to derive according to what was put in the APPs. So I think that we also accept the advice that we have been given by the committee members in terms of what it is that we need to improve on and what it is in terms of your oversight that you see that we need to do. Also, Chair, that in one of the meetings we did promise the committee that the maintenance plan will be submitted to the committee or else presented, because indeed, Chair, we cannot have a proactive maintenance, but we should have preventative maintenance, but preventative maintenance needs a plan. So we also heed that advice and the comments very strongly, Chair. And we thank you very much, Chair, and the portfolio committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, DM, for these closing remarks that useful. Yes, we have indicated some of the challenges and some of the things that we feel that the department can improve on. But what as the portfolio committee we will always frown upon is the underspending that has been displayed in some of the programs by the department. On that one, we will always say it is wrong, a lot has to be spent, and if then a particular emphasis will be done on EPWP, I think all of us as the portfolio committee, we agree on that one, that transfers should be made in time, so that those that are benefiting at the tail end are not disadvantaged by those processes of submitting and the processes that are being followed. If possible, something must be done in assisting the department, the municipalities, and all those that are in fact in charge of the EPWP. With those few words, we appreciate your contribution, DM, and your team in this report, and also the progressive way that the honorable members have discussed on the issues that are entailed in the report. We then move from that, go to the next item, which is the issue of the minutes of yesterday's meeting, consideration of the minutes of the previous meeting. Lwazi, can you flight our minutes?
Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable members, yesterday we had a meeting, and these are the minutes of that meeting. Do we have any corrections or grammatical errors that need to be made? I think I see Minister's hand. Minister apparently was in the meeting. Maybe before we deal with minutes, let's give a few minutes to Minister. Minister?
No, thanks. Greetings to you, Chair, the Deputy Minister, and all colleagues. No, I joined during the time when the team was responding, and correctly so, DM was leading us. I was just asking, Chair, whether I'm allowed to move for the adoption of the minutes. Thank you.
No, Minister. I think it's only the members that can move for the adoption. But we got your apology, Minister, and we appreciate that you managed to join us after your subnet committee that you had earlier today. So you can move for the minutes. Honorable members, but you may remain in the meeting, Minister. Honorable members?
Yes, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mjobo. Honorable Mjobo moves for the adoption of the minutes. May I have a second, please?
I second, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Michelle. The minutes of yesterday's meeting have since been adopted by this meeting. Members, can we show our faces? I sincerely asked yesterday that this is our last meeting this term, and this is the Heritage Month. We have seen a minister that he has not heeded that call. Can we see other members so that they did hit the call to wear traditional attire today's meeting?
I did not get the memo.
Honorable Mashele, Honorable Tring, Honorable Tring promised to wear a duke.
Apologies, Chair, I'm still on the road, so I do not have.
What is happening with your camera? But on that note, Honorable members, this is our last meeting for this quarter. As we all know that on the 22nd, which is Friday, the Parliament will rise, and the such will come back in October. Thank you so much for all the work that you have done in this quarter. I know it was very intense because we were having meetings Tuesdays and Wednesdays, which we don't normally do. But in all that, you were here, you read the documents, you participated in all the meetings. So we really appreciate what you have done, Honorable Members. We will be coming back in October even in October, if need be, we will try to do two meetings in a month, because what I've seen, it has shown us that there is a lot that we can do if we take two meetings in each week, not only one meeting. That way we may cover a lot of work if we do it like that. In those few words, honorable members, Honorable Jobo, she has a challenge with him. With her device.
The laptop, Yabisa.
Okay. He has a very expensive device that she cannot operate properly. So on that note, honorable members, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Bye, colleagues.